So it's Monday the 9th of November at 9:30 p.m. Lima time. I'm on board a balsa wood raft, the Tupac Yapanqui, as part of the Contiki 2 expedition. We are 85 nautical miles west of Callao, Peru, where we departed from 2 days ago. And I'm here with Torgeir Higraf, the expedition leader. You worked very hard for this, to be able to sit here in the dark. Can you say something about how it feels to be here right now?
Yeah, it feels magnificent. It's one of the best feelings you can have, to control an ancient vessel like this and feel absolutely safe. With the stars above you and the phosphor lights underneath you, and you are a part of this great universe in a way that is very, very difficult to compare with other types of vessels.
So you say you feel absolutely safe. I'm here too. I don't feel unsafe. But at the same time, you know, this thing is moving a little bit. It's shaking. We can feel the boards go back and forth a little. We can hear the creaking of the cabin. Is it sure? Are you sure about its construction?
Yeah, it consists of 700 knots that keeps all the logs together, and on top of the logs you have a bamboo deck. All the water that comes into the deck disappear after 1 second. So, and then we have a cabin that is secured with lots of knots as well. So yes, I think we can be pretty safe here. It's a raft, and it's almost funny that we have a life raft on the raft. I would never ever in my life enter that life raft. I would stay on this even if we had a broken mast or whatever. This is the safest place to be.
So I guess we have the life raft because that was one of the requirements the authorities in Peru had in order to let us go. They had a long checklist of things. I don't think that's your favorite part of the expedition work, is it, to fill out the forms?
No, but I have filled out a few of them, and we had Roberto, who did the worst part of the job, to walk from office to office in Callao and Lima to get authorizations and also to pay fees that is for the government. And it has been, to be honest, a very hard job to put this thing together, and much more hassle than I expected, actually.
But you've done this before as well. You did Tangaroa in 2006, right? So has Peru changed? Is it more bureaucracy now? Is Peru becoming more of a regulated state, or is it a... How is the Peru experience different?
Peru is different in many ways. It's more traffic, more chaos, and more bureaucracy. We had, of course, a lot of papers in 2006 as well, but now it's almost five times more. And we couldn't bring on the raft our mixture of bread. That was taken by the customs because they apparently thought that this mixture of bread was not good enough in Peru. I mean, we have been eating the worst bread I ever had for 6 weeks.
Right, yeah. Still, we made quite a few friends in Peru, and we have been hosted by the Escuela Naval, the Navy and their shipyard, where we've been making this raft, and I don't think we wouldn't have been able to do it without the help of their cranes and their hospitality, would we?
No, we owe the Peruvians a lot, and this time I want to go back to Peru with the raft, and it will be the first raft that is in the ownership of the Peruvians. As you say, the Peruvian Navy has been very, very helpful, and they have given us not only a spot to build this, but all the tools and lots of support from the workers.
So you said you would one of the rafts would end up here in Peru. You're actually sailing round trip this time, which is a first. Nobody's ever done this before. I think people have sailed to Easter Island before, maybe even on balsa wood rafts to Easter Island, but nobody's done it round trip. Why do you want to do round trip?
Well, there are someone who did it round trip, and that's why we call it Tupac Yupanqui, because he was probably one of the guys who went all the way to Easter Island and to a couple of other islands and returned to South America.
But that's in the 1500s, right? Is that what you're trying to recreate?
Yeah, that's one of the voyages that we recreate. But I think many people from South America and Polynesia sailed this route before him. We are copying a maritime culture that is almost 5,000 years old. So the raft where they're a cargo vessel, and we know for sure that we can have 10 tons of provisions and water on this raft. It's very capable of long distance, long lasting voyages.
We actually have quite a lot of water with us now underneath the deck. We have the bottles, and they make a certain sound that one can hear in the distance, perhaps. Maybe you could record it.
Yeah, let's try to record it over here. Sounds almost like drums. Someone is playing the drums underneath us.
It's what I imagine a whale would sound like if it came up underneath. But it's not a whale yet. Actually, we haven't seen any animals yet, have we? We haven't even caught a fish.
Yesterday they saw dolphins. They were swimming quite near the raft.
Okay, I must have missed that. Yeah, but how about the fishing? We saw some fantastic photographs of you with the fish from Tangaroa. Is that going to happen here as well?
Yeah, but when we get out of the Humboldt Current, the fishing will be an important thing here. Now we had fish today on the hook, but we lost it. So you can have fish in the Humboldt as well.
And the Humboldt, as you say, is a current. It's a cold water current that comes up along Chile and Peru, and it brings us north northwards here, further north than we really want to go. But I guess there's no way around that. How long will it be before we get out of the Humboldt currents?
I think we'll sail about 3 or 4 days more in this speed, and then you will come to a place that is almost like shifting track from one train track to another. Suddenly you will feel that a current is moving you western and not north.
Right. How different is this this raft from the original Contiki raft from 1947? Can you say something about similarities and differences?
Yeah, we have a big sail standing here. We have 90 square meters of sail. Contiki had 25. We have the Guares to steer with, and actually now we are running on autopilot. All the Guares are helping us to not drift too much with the current and wind. We can actually steer towards it. So It's an easy functional system that has been in use for 1,000 years at least.
So we have to talk a little bit about these guara boards or center boards or these things that are put down vertically straight into the water. They're about 2 meters long, made out of hardwood. And we tried to put as many of them as possible into the water because they act as keels. And then we're sitting at the back here and we're trying to control one of them up and down a little bit. Just, you know, a foot up or a foot down will change the direction of the raft by 10 degrees or so. So if you want to go up towards the wind, you lift the guara board up. And then if you want to go down, you push the guara board down. We have these pegs that we put into the guara boards to make it stay in one position. It's quite ingenious, and I'm as a sailor, I've never seen anything like that. I'm used to using a rudder to control the boat, and here we have a more than 30-ton raft that can be controlled by this little plank, this little piece of wood that you just move a foot or so. It's ingenious how does it work?
Yeah, right now we are sailing on the course of compass course of 245. If I now raise the guara, let's say 15 centimeters, we'll see a difference in a few minutes. And then we will go more towards the wind, because we are doing this with the guara in the aft.
So we can actually see this on the compass now.
Now we are below 240, and soon we will go 235.
Yeah, we're there.
You can see that the compass is changing course. And it stops on about 2:30, and that's the limit for tonight, I think.
So who came up with this system?
There used to be people along the coast of South America who used balsa wood raft to go out and collect the guano in the islands. The guano were used as fertilizers for the rich kingdoms, who produced enough food for thousands of people living in cities. These were one of the six first civilizations on Earth. And the history books has been rewritten recently when they came up with a place of Caral, a 5,000-year-old city, actually with people depending on the sea for a living. And they were getting food from the fishermen, and in return they gave the fishermen nets to fish and probably sails. At least they were self-provisioned with food from the crops and the ocean. And this maritime civilization kept going on until the Europeans arrived. And the Europeans, the Spaniards, they were taking notes about this giant balsa wood raft they met along the coast, and they were absolutely impressed by the sailing qualities and the cargo capabilities. We can have lots of texts in archive of Sevilla that explains how these rafts were looking and sailing. So now we have made a replica about the same type of vessel, and it's not a replica of Kon-Tiki, because Thor Heyerdahl did not know very much about the balsa wood raft when he started his career in the 40s.
So when the Spaniards came, they actually named they took the name balsa to mean a raft as well, and that continues to be the case in Spanish. Balsa is both the name of the tree and also the the type of boat, the type of raft we're sailing. They call it a balsa. So I guess there's a strong connection there between the balsa trees and the raft construction method. But when the Spaniards came, they suddenly stopped.
Yeah, after a few decades, they stopped sailing the balsa raft, much because the value of the goods that they were sailing was taken away. For instance, the spondylus that used to have a great value had no value at all among the Spaniards. So there were no reasons anymore to go out in the ocean sailing the rafts.
Spondylus, what's that?
Spondylus is it's a kind of a shell that is growing on 12 to 15 meters depth outside of the coast of Ecuador and northern Peru, but also in Mexico. And these were brought to the kingdoms because the king used it as necklaces. And also when the king died, they put the spondylus on the ground when he was carried in his as a mummy.
So this was kind of a currency in the pre-European communities.
It was a symbol of power, a symbol of the elite to use to get even more power. And they had also belief that this this will help them to get more food and be more wealthy. So the spondylus trade is an important part of the balsa raft history.
Huh. We don't carry much spondylus here this time, but we have a lot of other stuff, including some electronics and satellite transponders and AIS receivers and VHF radios and solar cell panels and computers and tablets and charging cables and inverters and winches and lots of modern stuff. How do you feel about adding all this to a traditional raft?
They work pretty nice together. We can talk to the world. Last night we were talking to BBC. It's fun to be able to communicate our experience and our scientific work with schools and journalists and friends. So absolutely, the masterpiece of this expedition is to have all this scientific equipment on board and be able to use it without any other source of power than the sun.
So is there like two types of people on this raft? Like one group is doing the sailing and one is doing the scientific work? Or are you able to get people to do a little bit of both and help in with the science while at the same time being good sailors?
Yeah, we have many practical, we have many handymen in the raft, and they are able to do scientific work just as well as they are doing the sailing. So I think it will be a good team dividing these important tasks.
Okay. That's it for tonight. We'll keep on looking at the stars out here and make sure the raft goes in the right right place. If you're listening to this and have access to the web, you can go to kontiki2.com and there should be a map there on the side, and you can follow our progress as we sail through the night here around 12 degrees south.